Welcome to Let's Talk Fleet Risk, a podcast for those who manage drivers and vehicles and want to reduce road risk in their organisation. In this episode, I'm talking to James Tillier, Managing Consultant at Transformotion, on the subject of fitness to drive. We cover what exactly does fitness to drive encompass: mental fatigue, drivers who are distracted by personal issues, how to broach these issues with drivers, and how to support drivers through policies, workshops, and resources. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Let's Talk Fleet Risk. My guest today is James Tillier, Managing Consultant at Transformotion, based in Ireland, who are specialists in immersive driver training. Welcome to the podcast, James.
Well, thanks, Simon. It's lovely to be here.
James, perhaps we could start just by introducing yourself, please, and explain a little bit about who you are and what Transformotion does.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, well, I've been involved in road transport for over 20 years now, and a lot of my time has been spent working on driver development in terms of careers, training and engagement. For Transformotion, well, it's a road transport consultancy and training developer. We work on projects that focus on things like vehicle autonomy, and what it means for the labour market, as well as driver training. In fact, our latest project is called Gaming DRV, and we're busy championing the cause for distance learning and formal driver training. We're also developing prototypes for games and gamification in general, particularly where driver CPC is concerned. In addition to that, we also develop products for fleet managers to help them manage vehicles and drivers. It's a fairly unique service, or I like to think it is, where we build our bespoke toolbox talks, policies, safety systems of work, audits, and that sort of thing. And that's offered through a website called easyfleet.com. So that's easyfleet with an R on the end.com. And then finally, we develop immersive driver training. So this is in partnership with a company called ANET360. We use eye tracking technology, which is a bit of a first within our sector. We use 360 degree video and drone footage to create really engaging visuals, which is sort of all wrapped up into a sort of classroom based training course. And drivers get to use an interactive app where they improve their knowledge retention, and it also reduces a lot of the tedious sort of admin tasks, because we've sort of wrapped up things like feedback forms and ID checks within the app. So we do a fair bit, and we sort of wrap that up into three sections.
Brilliant. This conversation sort of came about because of a chat you and I had a couple of months ago before Christmas around driver well-being and Driving for Better Business. We've been looking at a range of issues throughout the quarter that kind of fall under the broad heading of fitness to drive. So I was wondering what that term means to you.
Yeah, I remember our conversation very well. And I think you've hit the nail on the head with that, because it is a very broad term. And I think it's sometimes quite difficult to pin down. But for me, it's about being physically and mentally ready to control a vehicle. So a lot of time we know that if we've got cramp, for example, or a headache or a cold, it's quite clear. But it's more difficult to know if we're suffering from mental fatigue.
So, we know there are rules about how much time you can spend driving in any given day because of the concentration required. It can take its toll, and concentration will wane over time. So this issue of mental fatigue, it's assuming your head's in the game to start with, isn't it? If the driver's got personal issues to deal with, what effect does that have?
It's interesting, because one thing we discovered with the immersive training is through the eye track tech, we can actually see how often a driver's eye is looking in a certain direction. And the sheer volume of eye movements from point A to point B in a given journey is enormous. It's huge. And a driver doesn't realize it, because it's an involuntary movement, but it goes some way to explaining why a professional driver actually feels so exhausted at the end of the day. It's not just the physical task of driving, it's also what their brain is doing and actually where they're looking. But in terms of personal issues, it's very difficult for anyone to avoid thinking about the general rigors of life. I think we all appreciate that. But the result is almost always emotive. So things like anger, resentment, worry, they all come to the fore. And in terms of what that means for driving, well, that tends to lead to things like erratic driving technique, risk-taking, distraction, speeding, all the negative stuff. And obviously those are really detrimental to the safety of the driver and other road users.
Just give us some examples of what those sort of issues can be. What sort of issues are we talking about that drivers can bring into the cab with them?
Yeah, well, it's the ones you might expect. So generally speaking, health issues, money worries, relationships, but more than that, it can be the humdrum. So things like daydreaming about the latest box set or what's for tea or the next holiday or that sort of thing. All of those factors create maybe a distraction or a brain fog that's detrimental to the job of driving. And I think the problem is that we very often get into a car or a van or a truck or a bus and we just drive. And it's very much an automated thing. I mean, some drivers might think they can just switch to driver mode, and that's fair to say it's the case that some do. But it's not a natural given ability. And an argument, for example, that happens at home tends to linger once you're out and about. So what happens then is that the issue can fester. And it can grow in your mind and take over a sort of the rational part of your brain, if you like. And really, I think when that happens, it's an alarm. It's a bit of an issue that can't be reversed. Alternatively, as I said, worrying can cause the brain to become fogged, which again leads to sort of late braking or poor judgment. So there are so many different factors in terms of mental awareness that have an impact on your driving.
And you mentioned a study or driver assessments that you'd done with an eye tracker. Did you notice any trends with those eye movements that possibly, I don't know whether you discussed the results with the drivers afterwards and were able to sort of match up certain levels of distraction or types of distraction with the sort of behaviour they were exhibiting and the eye movements? Was there any lessons you learnt out of that?
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting because when you do the study on eye tracking and you sort of break down the eye movements, we have the benefit of being able to see through heat maps and single points on a video where exactly they've been looking and how often. What we don't really know is why. So what we've done in the past is approach the driver and say, look, you know, we've discovered that you've been doing this. Do you know why it is? And more often than not, they don't know. I'll give you an example. We had a situation where we filmed a driver joining a motorway. And as he was joining the motorway, he actually looked twice as much to his near side than his offside. And you think, well, that doesn't really make sense because as you're joining a motorway, you would naturally look in your offside and you'd look for traffic and the traffic flow and where the gap is. And he said, well, I don't really know why I did that. And we sort of pinned it down to what we think is that he's so focused on looking at the near side because of left turns. So this was an HGV. He very often drives in London. His brain has sort of almost tuned in to naturally look at the near side as a way of sort of protecting cyclists when they're making left-hand turns. So what you've discovered is that actually over time, the brain's been trained, but the awareness just isn't there because it becomes an automated response, if you like. So that was quite interesting.
And I can understand why that would be an automated response if he's a professional driver and he's doing it day in, day out. But of course, it's important to remember that we're not just talking about those drivers you spend all or most of the days on the road. There's many of us, me included here, who go out for occasional meetings too. Presumably those sorts of drivers are prone to the same kind of distractions. You've got sort of relationships at work that presumably could affect you the same way as relationships at home and, worries about work or deadlines in the same way as you might have worries about health or money at home. Would that be true?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that as an example, if you take a hands-free call, we all know that's quite a well-known distraction. But how many of us actually think about the effect of the call once that call has ended? So the conversation may have been heated, for example. It may have been something you disagreed with, in which case, when you end that call, your emotions possibly take over your rational driving style. So as a result of that discussion, your driving may decrease, your ability to drive may decrease, which means you increase the risk. And something that I've researched before is something called cognitive tunneling. I mean, it sounds very scientific, and it certainly is, but actually the fundamentals of it are quite straightforward. And why cognitive tunneling is important is because it often flies under the radar, but it's the main cause of accidents involving human error. And in a nutshell, it's where the brain focuses on a single task or an issue and neglects the other factors. So as an example, a driver's traveling on an unfamiliar road, which is very often the case. They're looking for an entrance. They're so fixated with finding that entrance that things like a cyclist or a tight bend or any warning alarms are barely noticed or registered. And of course, what that does is it means that through cognitive tunneling, they've created risk for all other factors out on the road. And that's one to really sort of pin down, because there are so many risks involved there.
You raised an interesting point about finishing a call and that's still affecting your emotional state. And a very good friend of the Driving for Better Business program is a lady called Professor Gemma Briggs from Open University, who's one of the UK's foremost experts on mobile phone distraction from driving. And I had a discussion with her just the other day, and she said it can affect your brain can take up to 5 minutes to disengage from that call because you're still thinking about the content of the call, mulling over certain things. You're not back in the game. You know, it's not a case that you end the call and you're back concentrating on your driving. Your head's still out of the game for, you know, up to another 5 minutes after that. So yeah, there's a really good.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not surprised that that research sort of come to the fore. It's I think it's a real problem that we perhaps sometimes neglect to remember.
Driving for Better Business is developing a new online toolkit to help employers create and review their driving for work policy, including various sections around fitness to drive. This new resource will be entirely free to access and include periodic email updates as and when official guidance or legislation changes to help you keep your policy up to date. You can register your interest now to ensure you receive an email when the new policy toolkit is launched. The web address for the registration page is in the show notes. So if we look at this from a driver manager's point of view, an employer's point of view, broaching these kind of issues with drivers is probably going to be quite difficult. There could be instances, I guess, where there are signs that might indicate an issue with a driver. There might be some mental health issues or they're distracted about various things. But probably many other drivers who are suffering in silence are able to hide it quite well. So where does a driver manager start with this issue?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's a tricky one also, because a lot of managers feel as though they don't want to sort of intrude or pry into the private life of any drivers. And sometimes it's quite difficult to feel as though you're able to cope with that sort of topic. But I think there are things that you can do as a manager. I mean, for example, you might want to set up a sort of informal get together or nominate a driver to be a sort of welfare rep. I think very often with groups where you've got colleagues or peers, that can be very effective. Of course, not everyone's going to open up, and again, that's fine. But if you allow the drivers the time to talk to each other rather than just the usual sort of banter, there's a chance that they'll build a different culture within the company. And so it becomes easier to talk about this sort of thing. I think it's important to reassure drivers also that there's no judgment or bias, that there's an inherent suspicion sometimes about these actions, but it's really important to keep them on side. So avoid talking about things like disciplinary process or general process, because again, that just sort of falls into the trap of being a manager. I think in this case, you want to actually take a step back and actually let them have the freedom to talk. But it's really important to remember, it's not about prying into somebody's life. It's just about offering non-judgmental support if it's wanted. If it's not wanted, then leave it. But I think it's important just to open that up.
And I guess part of that conversation needs to be to understand whether there's anything the company is doing or is something in the work environment that is potentially causing that distraction. I can understand why some drivers wouldn't want to talk about personal issues going on at home, but you know, if it's relating to an issue that stems from something at work, then really it's incumbent upon the employer to do their best to find out what that is.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's important to take it on a case-by-case basis. I mean, you have to react to the issue, but also provide something that makes an impact. So I think as a manager, you can determine quite quickly whether something is a work-related issue or if there's more to it. I think very often if it's a work-related issue, drivers would generally say, look, I'm having this problem with a certain task, or, you know, I want a bit more training on this. When it's a private issue, generally speaking, they won't. Mm. But a bit, it's important. Don't assume it's right to ask them what they need, because they also may not have no idea. And I think as a manager, if you ask a driver, you know, what they need on a personal or private issue, it sort of just puts the pressure back on them. And very often drivers might sort of clam up or close up and not feel free enough to talk about that sort of thing. And I think that's why it's a really difficult balancing act, but it is possible. You know, going back to what I was saying a moment ago about having a peer or colleague group, that can make a real difference. But then there's also things like resources that are freely available. So DFBB's own Calm Driver program, for example, or Mates in Mind, there's plenty of resources there for people. So it's important to take stock of that and use what you've got out there.
Once that conversation started, then if a driver does open up and admit that they're struggling, what are the best ways that an employer can support them? And yeah, are there any resources that are available to help employers with that?
In addition to things like the Calm Driver Program and Mates in Mind, there are lots of different resources available, not just from those two. But you may want to sort of look at how you deal with sort of internal policies, for example. So when you're writing a policy, try to avoid sort of dictating and instead explain what the company will do to support the necessary actions. And that can have an enormous effect. If you have shared responsibility within a policy, it makes a huge difference. And it tends to stick in the minds of drivers more when they understand what they have to do, but also what the company will commit to do in relation to that process. That can be a big win, because I think time and time again, companies fall into the trap of writing chapter and verse with, say, systems of working and policies and procedures. And I think it can be detrimental to the end user. I think very often don't just hand a pack of documents to drivers just to wade through. Yeah. Very often that's the case on induction. But instead, sort of look at how you're communicating. Maybe reduce the number of words that you use within policies. And don't write policies for health and safety managers or insurance companies. Instead, focus and write it on the topics that drivers connect with. I think something else to be aware of, and it sort of goes back to what I was saying about cognitive tunneling, is something called mental modeling. So this is a technique which is very basic. So it sounds very complex, but it's quite basic. But what it means is that you can actually develop behaviors and improve performance and enhance safety standards by adopting mental modeling. And I'll give you an example. So there's generally sort of four good examples of that. Number one, on your way to work, envisage the day and think about what you'll be doing ahead of time. Number two, during that journey, describe to yourself what you're seeing and actually what it means. So sort of talk out loud about what you're seeing, and that helps to secure or cement hazards in your mind. Number three, find other people to hear your experiences and talk about them and discuss them. And number four, force yourself to anticipate what's going to happen next. You know, you've got to be predictive. Then you'll notice what goes unmentioned or unnoticed, not just in the car or van or truck, but also in everyday working life. And that can act as a warning sign. So that's quite a useful sort of technique.
Yes, you mentioned Calm earlier on there, and of course we did some work with Calm a couple of years ago and created a what we call the Calm Driver toolkit, which was a series of resources to go in the vehicle, which included a leaflet, a couple of stickers, and basically it was information to show them, to point them in the right direction for helplines or web resources. Because if you've got a driver in the vehicle, quite often they're a lone worker, and if they're not going to put their hand up and offer to talk about it, you've got to put the information where they're going to have access to it when they really need it, which is probably when they're on their own in the vehicle. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. But that was a really good pack. It's a physical pack that we don't charge for, and can just go in the vehicles to support the drivers. Where you were finishing up on that point, really about sort of creating a good culture, weren't you? Where it becomes easier for, I guess, for drivers to speak up and that kind of thing. I mean, there's all sorts of things that employers can do and information that they can put out. We kind of, I guess, we all know that, you know, we should eat better and exercise more, and that can help some of these issues. But you know, are there any other, what are the key points you would suggest around sort of creating a culture where maybe we can help minimize some of this from the employer side of things, and minimize some of the way these distractions manifest themselves with drivers? If they, you know, if they've got serious issues at home, then you're not going to eradicate that, but at least encouraging them to make some changes might minimize the effects. Are there easy ways that employers can do that?
If you factor in the issues at home, I agree. There's a limit on what you can do, but also what in a way you can actually provide information that helps them to make their own decisions. So if you have maybe a toolbox talk or training exercise where you highlight the impact of what happens at home to what happens out on the road. You know, I think that could potentially be a huge thing. I think very often we focus on, driving for work. We don't focus on just driving, you know, and actually the commute to work. I think it's a real missed opportunity. So if you want to get the message across and you don't necessarily want to tap into or pry into a driver's life at home, there are things you can do, which is to just let them know the impact that that has on their working life. So start to make the connection, start to put it all together for them. And when they actually obviously get to work, there are more things you can do than just having a discussion group, for example. I think you can tap into, as say, plenty of resources, but the fundamentals need to be in place. And the fundamentals are that, you know, you don't have office staff that maybe call drivers unnecessarily. You know, you minimize the amount of calls that a driver might have. You encourage drivers to maybe put their phone in the glove box. These are very well known, but these are quite simple ways of actually limiting the amount of distraction. Because it's not just about that conversation that may create emotion, it's also about the risk and the distraction out on the road. And I think fatigue is a big issue, and I think there are things you can do to look at driver scheduling, drivers' routes. You can look at how much rest they're getting. You know, focus maybe on the quality of rest that they get at home. And again, it's not just about sort of, I don't know, instructing them on how to sleep, because that would be nonsense. But what you could do is you could say, well, look, actually, here's the value of sleep and actually having the right sort of mattress and all of that. It's just recommendations. And I think all of that together can really help a driver to understand the impact and make those connections.
Yeah, I think that's excellent advice. That before we started recording this, James, you mentioned a toolbox talk that you've created to help employers with just these issues. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, sure. Yep. So we decided to sort of tackle this head on, and we produced a toolbox talk, which is called From Home to Rome. That's not the place. That's ROAM. And it's a toolbox talk that does exactly that. It makes the connection between home life and what happens to a driver's ability out on the road. Now, as an exclusive to DFBB, then we're looking to make that free for any podcast listeners. So we're going to be able to put up a code. The Toolbox Talk will be available on easyfleeter.com. Hopefully you can see what we're trying to achieve. But it's a useful Toolbox Talk. It's in about 35 minutes. But again, it's just a measure that can make a big difference to a driver's life.
Fantastic. I really appreciate you extending that offer to the DFBB community, James. Thank you for that. And I will put links to that in the show notes, along with some of the resources that we've mentioned, plus some other resources that we've got around fitness to drive and sort of fatigue, driver well-being, the issues that we've discussed today. And also I'll point people as to how they can connect with you, James, on LinkedIn and your Transformation Easy Fleeter websites as well. So if you'd like to get in touch with James, feel free. The links will be in the show notes. So James, thank you very much. Really enjoyed that, and a very interesting topic to discuss with you.
Yeah, it's been a real pleasure, Simon. Yeah, I've enjoyed it.
Brought to you by Driving for Better Business.